Okay. Aloha, everyone. Welcome to the Bori Fully podcast. Today, I have a super special guest. Her name is Sandy Stream. She is an activist and author of The Courage Circle, whose work is built on the belief that everyone is capable of finding peace and a warrior-like strength within themselves. After teaching law for 20 years, raising her two children, and facing a life full of adversities and lessons, she is now facilitating workshops teaching others how to live in peace and power. Welcome to the show, Sandy. I'm so excited you are here.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I always love the opportunity to talk about these subjects that I think are really important these days with the world as it is.
Yes, I agree 100%. You know, I have your book here in front of me for those of us that are just listening to the podcast instead of watching the show. There are so many points that you mentioned, Sandy, that really just hit the nail on the head for me and drove some points home in terms of what I've been, I feel like, turning blue in the face trying to share with this world, things that I'm passionate about. Something that really resonated for me was that you mentioned. You talked about boundaries and how boundaries are drawn not to control others, but to allow the defining of the self. And I love that point. Speaking of defining the self, I would like to start with the question, how do you describe your essence?
A question to start with. Oh my, as if there's words for that. My essence. Okay. I guess I would describe it as, well, it's a feeling. That we have of ourself. And the one I have of myself, I mean, it includes, movement, like it's a moving feeling, and it's definitely has a soft section, it has a strong section. And in terms of maybe my unique essence, because maybe we all have essence, but everyone has a bit of this different touch. Mine definitely feels very active, meaning like I feel very propelled to doing activism of whatever kind that calls me. So that might be different from others that I've met that are also living what seems to be in their own essence, but their role in our world might be a little bit different. So I do have one friend, and her role is just not just is to maybe share poetry or do it. In a different touch, and there might be just different ways everybody does this kind of work and different ways of expressing it. And mine definitely feels very active.
Got it. That feeling of activism and a sense of inner empowerment, so self-empowerment and peace is something that definitely resonated throughout the book. Specifically, this idea of self-love. And I know sometimes it's a word that's just tossed around without a complete understanding because it's something that needs to be experienced. I loved that you described self-love to not be selfish. I described that same term as it's putting yourself first because you honor that spark inside. Can you share with us what your relationship to self-love is?
I think I didn't even understand what that whole idea was. I mean, I don't even think I knew the word for a long until relatively recently. And we kind of a lot of times, maybe especially women, but not only women, grow up thinking that the way to live is just to be kind to everyone, be nice to everyone, and that is your kind of best way to live as a person. Not realizing, or nobody speaks as this as being abandoning of the self, or as rejecting the self, or ignoring the self, or any other word about you being part of this kindness picture. And so, for me, at some point, when you get into really bad situations or you're really not feeling well deeply inside, there was just, I guess a turn inward on many other aspects. And one of them was to really see that it's not only I'm worth taking care of or that I matter, but I actually see it as a responsibility. Like it's actually my responsibility to do so. just like it would be my responsibility to take care of my children when they're young, right? So to become an adult and think we're not responsible now to take care of a self, to me that doesn't match. But the love aspect, I don't know if it's exact, it's intertwined for sure, but it definitely includes being able to understand every single piece of every single thing that I feel and do and have done and anything with loving eyes as opposed to critical eyes, internal eyes, I guess. So that's what I would define self-love. It's a constant. It's constantly feeling just caring for yourself. And I know people also they use the word, just like you're saying, self-love is used like loosely. Self-care, I think it's also a word that's used loosely. And what does that mean? Self-care. And I think for me, they match in terms of like really caring about yourself. It's self-care. Like I care about me. And because I care about me, then I might do A or B or C. It doesn't matter. Every person is different of what they need to do. But really to care about yourself.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So self-love stems from, for you, it seems two parts. There is that I care about myself. And so the actions that flow from that space is to take care of yourself in whatever way that might look like in that moment. And
Yeah.
also the sense of duty or responsibility.
Yeah, and also understanding myself, etc. And then, at
Understanding.
some point, if you really want to go deeper, I don't know, but at some point I have experienced moments where there isn't any more like love yourself. You just kind of are that feeling. There is no separation of loving yourself because what is self if not that feeling? So that might be a bit hard to explain, but I think in general it's easier to explain it as like self-love, as if there's two parts of us, but I'm not sure there is.
Wow, that's
Yeah.
a really great point. I think perhaps in the beginning, like you were alluding to, Sandy, we have to act as if. So we do the things that, convince ourselves, our subconscious mind, that we do love ourselves. And then maybe we
Oh.
begin to fall down this rabbit hole of, well, actually, there is this blending of this is what I do versus this is what I am.
That you are love, actually.
Yes.
Yeah,
Right.
but that's something is, I mean, I see the language you're using. It's something we have to feel. There's no one that could tell you or teach you with words. They can give you the idea to start looking there, or but I don't think it's something we can just like,
Right.
give. So each person needs to do it. And I think all kinds of, heart chakra, everything related to the heart really helps that. Whether you do heart chakra meditation, qigong, yogas, anything that is very heart-centered will get, us towards feeling ourselves in that way a bit deeper instead of thinking we are our thoughts or our careers or our titles or all the other things we think we are.
I could take this in so many different places, but I don't want to get
Go for
too deep.
it. Wherever you like, I'm fine.
What would you say is your greatest challenge to self-love? Or
I
what
don't think
was?
I. What's the biggest challenge? What was the biggest challenge? I mean, for me also, loving the self again, it's more like, when you start to trust yourself very deeply, I think that was very hard. When you don't have people around you who either validate your feelings or who understand boundaries or who understand your path or choices and all that. It's very hard to absolutely hold your ground and decide that that's how you want to go about your choices and your life. So I think just trusting that there's this deeper knowing and wisdom inside, regardless of, the outside feedback, that's definitely a big challenge. I think it was for me, probably is for most people. To have that level of trust, given their interactions, right? Our regular interactions in life are not very encouraging, are not validating, are not respectful of each other and our boundaries. So that's like most interactions, as far as I see. And so to really walk this path until more of us are walking this way, really feels like a bit of a lone, Sometimes it feels like you really need to muster a lot of courage to hold this way for yourself until we all feel this way, and then it'll be the norm, right? Then it'll be the normal.
Yes, soon. Crossing my fingers
Hopefully.
soon.
Yeah. Well, it is in my circles, surprisingly. I hold circles every week, courage circles. And now what at first seemed like, what a place to like be together, whatever. Now that feels like this is the normal way of human
Love
beings
it.
interacting. And
Love
yeah, it's
it.
great.
What would you give in terms of recommendations or advice for women or men who would like to hold this type of circle or that space for this type of thinking and feeling to be a norm?
Well, if they want to copy what I'm doing, I'd be more than honored to do that. So I could do a quick description of, the three steps basically that I do in every single circle. So the first thing we do, and whoever is facilitating could do such a thing if they feel it. You can't just do it if you don't feel it. But if you feel it, I ask everyone to introduce themselves in their usual way. And they all do. I'm an architect, I'm a lawyer, I'm a this and that. And I start also, I'm a lawyer, both with our usual title stuff. And then I take a moment and I invite everyone to let all of that go. So we let go of our careers, our titles, our kids, our dogs, like literally everything, just for the hour, and try to be together as human beings from our heart, from our spirit, from our humanity, from our energy, whatever word people feel works for them. And just that, invitation already. Kind of just lets go of all the other stuff. So for that hour, it literally takes just 2 minutes to do this, but it really sets the environment as equal beings experiencing whatever we're experiencing in the same room without all those comparisons of, who am I and who are you and all that. So that's the first thing. We do also a quick eye contact hello, which is very powerful if somebody wants to do that. Second thing we do is I do a demo of what is listening. So I ask someone to share anything and they can share. I could do it on you if you feel like it, or I can describe it up to you, but
You
you
can
want to? You want to share something?
absolutely.
Okay,
I'm in.
so I don't know, share whatever you like and you're going on for you. It could be easy, hard, anything.
Okay, great. Today I am feeling energized to be able to hold the space and share stories of others, their life journeys, but also to be able to connect to people in a way that helps me to learn a little bit more about myself. So when I am interviewing people like yourself on this podcast, when I am being the one being interviewed, either way, I feel like there is sense the sense of being able to connect to something real and not just the roles that you shared. And then there's also that other part of me that feels like I need to fit in with my environment sometimes and to not to say that I have to dumb down my content, but to be able to relay information or wisdom that I'm experiencing to people so that they feel like they understand is somewhat difficult. And then there's also that role of responsibility that I need to play as a I have two dogs. So as a human who takes care of these two dogs, having one of them be really sick right now is extremely difficult. Trying to hold that space to increase health vitality instead of focusing on the worries of what if she doesn't get better? What if this is serious? So I'm kind of riding multiple waves today.
Thanks for sharing. Okay, so if you were in the circle with many people there, I would do a quick demo of three different types of listening that we often experience in our life. So the first one, I won't even call that listening, but if we imagine ourselves like as a human mirror, they literally put the mirror down as if what you just said, which is 100% true, right? Like there's no falsehood, there's absolute truth in what you just said and shared with all of us. The mirror gets put down. And so we can call that dismissive, gaslighting, whatever, a lot of those words. And so that would look something like, oh, really, Dr. J? The other day I wasn't feeling so great, also like a warm bath, and I felt so much better. If you want to, like, that's really good. Okay. So that's really like, I just didn't even see what you just said, right? Totally missed the mark 100%. And it's not even a joke. It's actually pretty serious to be around people who are constantly dismissive and gaslighting could lead with, you know, to tons of mental health issues, I said, because we're not like in reality together, right? Like you just shared something that's true. It's not even about being nice. You shared something true. And I'm like, oh, but the tree is, you know, I'm just, you know, so it really creates a weird disconnect in ourselves when we don't have a little bit of reality checks that are healthy. So obviously that's not ideal listening. Number two, which we experience a lot also, again, if we imagine these human mirrors, so the person like picks up the mirror, I kind of see what you said, but I put it down really quick because I want to go fix it. I don't really like what you said, or I don't like your feelings, or I don't like that you're upset, or I can't handle feelings, or maybe I want to feel really important and give advice and save you. Or, you know, there's many reasons that we can call that the fixing energy. And that one would sound like, oh, really, Jisoon? Well, listen, with your podcast, first of all, just be yourself. Who cares? Like, do what you think, and too bad for everyone else. And the dogs, you know what? I mean, they're getting old. I know it's hard. I know a really good vet, and, you know. And so that, again, is not really the healthiest type of listening as far as, you know, we're concerned in our circle, at least, and my opinion in humanity. And the third is to be a clean human mirror, literally to reflect reality. Again, it's not even just about being nice, which it is, it's kind, but it's not even about that. It's to be in truth all the time and to see the truth, painful or not, happy or not, you know, to be comfortable and able to handle the truth. And so that one might sound something like, well, it sounds like you kind of have like three things on your mind that are really weighing down on you a little bit. Like one, you're trying to hold space for people and learn. Like it's very, sounds like it's really important for you. Actually, you said holding space many times. So you feel it's kind of your role to hold space and also trying to learn while you hold space. So that's like pulling you in one way. And then the other part is like you're a bit conflicted. It sounds like you're inner conflicted because you're the, what you're feeling, your own wisdom or knowledge, you're having to like adapt it a bit or something to audience. And that's feeling a bit off. And do I do that? Do I not do it? You know, it's not really fully what I'm experiencing. And what do I share? So just inner, you know, working on that part. And then the third thing, which sounds the hardest for you, is the situation with the dogs. And not only about holding space for them, it sounds like you're trying not to get too worked up or worried, but at the same time, you know, it's worrisome. It sounds like one of your dogs is having something, I don't know, a bit serious, or maybe not, maybe yes, and it's just very, very maybe scary or hard, that part of it. So is that about right, or did I miss something when I was describing right about it? So I don't even have to get it right. So when I say in our circle, like, we don't have to get it right. You hold the truth. So as long as I'm listening with this, like, is that right? Like, is that it? You can now expand or correct me, even say, no, actually, I'm not scared about the dogs. I'm just whatever, or I'm overwhelmed, or I'm overworked. And so when we do this kind of listening, people open like instantly.
Yeah.
You open because, not because I feel heard, literally because people are comfortable with reality. And we're not trying to fix everybody's reality instantly. It doesn't mean we never give some opinions or advice or whatever, but we don't go fixing and trying to change everything on the spot, because it gives the message that something's wrong with you. Like if I try to immediately fix this, I'm telling you something's wrong with this picture. What you just told me, something's wrong with it, but nothing's wrong with it. It's just happening right now, right? Like that's what you're experiencing, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so that's our second element, this little demo that I give with each person. So if anyone feels they can facilitate this thing, by all means, go do it in our world. Please do. And then the third element is we discuss the topic of the day. So once we do these little two things to get us in the healthy way together, then we discuss a new topic, and every week it's a different topic. One week it's on boundaries. One week it's on victim mentality. One week it's on this and on that. And, you know, my book has all these topics kind of one by one. And I was actually dreaming that maybe one day people could just, you know, take the book, start your own circle, discuss these things with people, because we don't discuss them at school and on the dinner table. And
yeah,
they're very important. You know, they're really, really important.
Absolutely. I loved the little section at the end of your book, Sandy, where you describe, I don't want to put words in your book, what a powerful human being looks like. And these descriptions, it really does make sense. Freedom, having that true voice, being able to express it, having energy, vitality, no longer hiding, having confidence. And there's a longer list than I'm going to be able to share, but it really does highlight some of the perhaps the values that we don't focus on so much because in our society today, we are so hyper-focused on fixing or feeling like we're broken or we're victims. And I must imagine that that self-development circle, I don't want to use the word circle to describe this, but that field really did go one way where self-development or self-help is all about, okay, this is wrong, this is right. So I really
Absolutely.
did love that aspect of your book where we're highlighting things that maybe are topics that are important to be discussed. Topics that we don't really think about when we begin to focus on what's wrong with ourselves or what's wrong with the world.
And it's very hard to, well, I mean, at the smallest level, we can look at your truth, like nothing's wrong with it, right? And when you apply that, nothing's wrong with it. You're going through difficulties, you have to make choices, you need to figure something out, but there's nothing wrong, right? And so when you apply that to everything, we just see things differently, and it also allows the other person to process and open and delve deeper and, maybe talk to someone because there's nothing wrong. We're just like kind of figuring out what my next step is, and it's in your hands, right? I didn't jump to fix you. So it also leaves the responsibility and the trust in the right person, which is you, because you are the only person who knows what to do. You're really the only person, right? I mean, we can try to share, I can try to give ideas, but at the end of the day, each person knows in a deep way what they need to do, what they, how to move in their life,
That
And
brings up a point that I was thinking about. Sandy, you mentioned that truth for you is something you feel in your body. Can you describe what truth feels like for you in your body?
I don't know that I hope it's not just me. I really believe we all have that feeling, if we, and I don't want to say if we quiet down the head as if you have to forcefully quiet down, but if we start to feel ourselves, and I feel like a lot of the topics we discuss in the circle kind of just eliminate a lot of thoughts. Like if we come to a clarity about rejection or whatever, they're just kind of gone because they don't make sense anymore. So it's not forceful. And so we can start to get more and more in the body and just feel. And then I still think we need to feel a lot of pain before we can start just feeling in general. Like we have to get comfortable with going towards our pain because pain will process if you feel it, as opposed to avoiding it. But then, so how does truth feel like throughout all of these? Well, the first thing is our feelings. Like that's true. That's why I think it's the demonization of emotions is so such a big problem in our world because it already cuts us off from truth, which is in our body, right? So if you say, I feel really angry today, that is 100% true in the body. It's true. It's like in reality. It's not an opinion, right? I feel sad is not anybody's opinion. It's actually reality. And so, our feelings, I'd say, is the first step towards feeling truth, what we feel, and then listening, okay, why do I feel sad? And then we can have a true answer for that. I know why I feel sad because maybe I'm lonely. Maybe I need to get out there a bit more. Maybe I lost somebody. Okay, or I know I feel mad. Okay, somebody, broke my boundaries and whatever. So we know if we look inside without criticism, we can feel the why. We know why. And that's all true as well. Like we can feel that in our body. We know why we're upset. We know why. We have to just look and feel that and feel our bodies and feel the truth and trust. And then there's some more subtle ones maybe that start to pop up that are harder to trust, like I really feel I should, travel to India or something, or
Yes.
I know I should like try painting just because it'll, I don't really know why, but I know I feel like I should do that, or I should talk to this teacher, or, those are harder to trust and follow, but they're going to keep gnawing at you until you do them. That's how I
Gnawing.
know things are true. They're like, they don't stop pestering you until you do it.
Got
Something like
it.
that.
Got it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when it's related to perhaps action steps or direction that your spirit or your soul is longing for you to go, it's gnawing. It keeps pestering.
Well, in one way or another, yeah.
For me, when I feel truth, I
Yeah.
physiologically feel it in my body. So when I, for example, listen to a story and I am moved to tears, I know that there's a kernel of truth in there. Or I'll stand in front of my bathroom mirror after I'm showered, getting ready, and I get this message, and it literally feels like an intuitive hit, like someone hit me in the gut, like I'll bend over because I feel it. That,
Oh, wow.
yeah. So
Amazing. Well,
truth is
for
something
you,
I
yeah.
physiologically feel in my
Yeah.
body.
In your
But
body.
you're saying, yes, truth doesn't have to be physiologically like blatant. It's a subtle thing
Well, yeah,
sometimes.
sometimes it's a feeling of some sort, which is, I guess I agree with you. It's in your body, but it could be, your emotions are true also. Just I feel sad, I feel like that's true, 100% truth. And I think that's where it starts. And then feeling the truth that I'm in pain and I feel really hurt, that's very true also. And then your guidance things, as you're saying, then we start maybe just to, because we're now feeling, right? If we've been avoiding feeling in general, we're not feeling anything. But when you start feeling and you start feeling all your emotions, you start feeling everything. I feel the music, I feel the air, I feel I should do this. I feel, we're back to being feeling in our bodies, instead of just living in the head, which is not reality.
It kind of takes me back to this idea that fear is real. You know how sometimes people say, oh, fear is not real, just get over it, or, it's just an illusion. But for me, fear is real. I feel fear. However, fear likes to tell a lot of lies. So it's not that the fear isn't real, it is. It's just the lies or the illusions that come with fear are things that might get in the way of us being able to live in our complete truths. And for me, I think it would be very helpful, Sandy, if we can differentiate the difference between something that's real and something that's true. Would you say there is a distinction there for you?
What's real? Well, I don't know. I mean, I try to think of the word reality as the whole thing, if they're true. Well, how about that fear one, if we play with this one and see in terms of your question how it works. So if I feel fear this moment because there's a lion, right? That's physiological fear. That's true and real. I mean, is that, do we call that true or real? I mean, it's real. And for me, I guess it's the same. And then a different, more psychological type fears, like I'm afraid to be rejected, right? Those are very, that's a very common fear, right? And I mean, people do feel it in their bodies, right? Their fear of rejection. So I would call it real. There's nothing to judge about it. And then for me, when we don't judge the feeling, then we can look into it. Like, okay, first, I'm feeling afraid. True. That's it. We don't need to go, I shouldn't feel, I shouldn't, I feel. That's if we stop there. And then we can look into why. And maybe we figured out, okay, I'm really afraid to be rejected. And then we can look into, if we want to, what to think about it, what to do about it, or read about it. But it's not judgmental. And like for that one, the way I can share, if you'd like, how I kind of not solved it for myself, or how I see it in terms of power is, if we keep looking for the outside world to do things, then we are, and it's not just a word, just like the other ones you said, we are actually giving our power, but I mean it literally, not just as a word. So if, for example, I say, you know what, Is it, you pronounce it Jusuni? I know people call you
Yeah,
Dr. J.
G-Sunny.
Jisun?
G-Sunny.
Jisun. Jisunny. Or
Yes.
whatever your real name, Jisunny.
Thank you.
So, or do you prefer Dr. J? I don't know which one
Whichever
people
you feel
use.
more
Okay,
comfortable with, yeah.
so if I say, okay, Dr. J, for the next 10 years, you will be the person who gets to decide if I am good, if I'm bad, if every decision I make is the right one or it's the wrong one. And you get to approve of me, and you get to say if I look good or not. It's you. Maybe you, and I'll choose one other person. The next 10 years, you two people are going to make all those decisions. So that is giving my power to you, right? Instead of, no, I'm taking it. You know, when they say take it back, no, actually, I'm going to decide if I approve of my decisions, if I think I should do this, if I think I should do that. You know, so for me, that's a very big shift in understanding power. And again, power is not force. This is what, you know, one example. There's many others of what feeling powerful is when, for example, you have not, you know, allocated certain people that are now making all those decisions about you. So that's a huge one. So in terms of that fear, is that true or not true? Yeah, I mean, yeah, you felt that fear. And yeah, you felt it in your body, but what are we able to grow and learn from that and how to deal with it, I guess, is, you know. And the other very big one that I think really is huge in our world and causes a lot of issues, actually, is the belonging one. So, you know, people worry a lot about belonging. And maybe that's what's unfortunate right now, that everybody belongs in certain groups. And so that means you don't belong in the other group, right? So that implies if you belong in one, you don't belong in the other, which makes them either the other group or the enemy or something else, right? Because they're not your group. And, you know, this leads to obviously a lot of division where, in fact, we're actually all in the same group, right? The higher level group is humanity. And we forget that and we start dividing ourselves in these subgroups and forgetting our main group on top. But I think we do this to satisfy a little bit this belonging idea. And for me, anyways, like how I ended up shifting, and it's recent. I mean, I'm 53. It's not like I lived this most of my life. I didn't live this ex type of way until relatively recently. But recently, first of all, I realized that really being in any group, it's not so liberating because there's rules. You break those rules, you're out, right? So you don't really belong. You belong if, you know, if you do exactly what my family, you know, you're in the family if you do what the family says, you're in this community if you follow the community, you're in this art group if you don't do it. Like, so
Very conditional.
it's, yeah, it doesn't feel that satisfying in the first place, right? Because I'm unique and now I have all these like things I have to do. So it didn't feel very liberating at all, actually, to these groups. And I preferred the idea of individuality and, you know, of each person. And so for me, what ended up happening, maybe because I was doing so many grounding exercises, like literal grounding exercises during COVID and during all my difficulties, like I was just listening to a million things that, and I really, really, really started to feel like I belong on this earth, period. Not in a group. I just belong here because I'm here. It's that simple because I'm here. So therefore I belong here. So it almost seemed as ridiculous as saying, like, you know, does the zebra belong on the earth? Let's see. We don't do that. The zebra belongs here because it's here. So of course it belongs here. It's here. Like in reality, right? Reality wise, it's here. So therefore it's supposed to be here because it is here, right? And so when I started really feeling that, I actually feel I belong anywhere and everywhere I go, no matter what I'm doing. It's not a state that comes from my surroundings. So if I'm going to talk to my daughter's principal and have a discussion with them over who knows what, I don't feel like I don't belong there. That's exactly where I'm supposed to be and what I'm supposed to be doing. And so this way of relieving that, not relieving on purpose, it just happened, you know, of viewing belonging in this world really, again, might, who knows, but it might liberate like billions of thoughts per day that are related to that, and billions of actions that are related to that. If that's true, and it is true for me, like it's not a theory, it's actually what I feel. You know what I mean? And I think I believe that of everyone, like everybody. I mean, they're here, so it's, well, I don't know what that means that they wouldn't belong here. Like, what does that mean? If you know what I mean? Yeah, like it
But
makes
for
sense, right? Doesn't
it
it?
does, right? I think it's, I mean, whether we want to say it's an evolutionary thing where we need to belong to a group, it's ingrained in our DNA, because back thousands of years ago, if you didn't belong to a group, your chances of survival have completely dipped,
Yeah.
significantly dipped. So
Yeah.
maybe it's that wiring that we have for that
Yeah.
like innate inherent need to survive. But also I think the human experience, it's very limiting in that we need to experience life through a very polar way where, you know, it's either yes or no, hot or cold,
Yeah.
big or
Yeah.
small. And so for us to understand who we are, I think we all have this desire and this drive to know who we are. But this
Yeah.
drive to know who we are, it's very limited in that we have to understand it as, okay, that is not me. Right. So we have to
Right.
understand the contrast. So what am I not in order for me to understand who I am? And I think maybe that's where that division comes from, trying to understand, okay, I'm in the group that loves chocolate ice cream. They like vanilla ice cream.
Right.
So maybe
Well,
that's where it comes from. But that need, that spontaneous grace where you understand, not just like here, up here in your head, but feel it in your heart. I belong here because I'm here. I'm right where I need to be. Is exactly that. It's that. It's a grace of experience, a wisdom, not intellectually. I can tell myself that I belong here. It's
That's
something
right,
that
yeah.
needs to be felt.
100%, yeah. And seeing each other ourselves as not being in groups, but actually as, you know, radical individuals, like individuality. So not to imagine that we are a bunch of this group, that group, that. No, every single one is unique, and that is exactly what you are to be, unique. So there's no more comparing or trying to fit into things. And of course, I hear what you're saying in terms of evolutionary, but at the same time, I mean, I would say evolutionary wise also, as children, we probably naturally learn to hide parts of ourselves or people please or all kinds of things to survive, right? So
Absolutely.
that our parents take care of us. Okay, but now what? Now we've grown up, and now, you know, we can mature in terms of emotional aspects. So it's not that it's not natural, but we can mature, emotionally mature from different things when we're not in that situation. We're not children anymore. So we can learn from that, you know, without criticizing it, right? It's understanding it, understanding what happened and why. So,
Yes,
yeah.
absolutely. So all of your books, Sandy, it seems like it really is an invitation to decondition ourselves from what we've learned about how we are supposed to be or how the world is supposed to be.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you start the book, you actually go through some of the limiting beliefs that we might be ingrained with. So for example, one of the things you said is, I'm not good enough the way I am. And there is another layer of truth that we can provide to that conditioned belief that might shatter that limiting belief, or the limiting belief that I'm helpless and there's nothing I can do. What would you say, Sandy, has been your greatest limiting belief or the biggest limiting belief that you've been able to decondition?
I would say if I wrote about anything in the book, it's probably I was doing the opposite. So everything. Well, otherwise they weren't lessons for me, right? Like I wrote about them probably because they were in one way discovery. So probably almost anything I wrote, which is a lot, as you see, many, many sections. What's the biggest one? I don't know if there's a biggest one, but I do feel at this point, anyways, that little exercise we did about seeing the truth of your feelings, for example. I know in the world it's seen as maybe like, you know, just a way to be nice. For me, it's actually like it's a very, very serious and important thing for our world to learn to do. It's not just about I mean, for me, it's a very, very important topic to be able to witness another person's reality and see it and accept it as not something to be necessarily fixed. It doesn't mean they could do whatever they want, but we're talking about just feeling, right? That to view another person's experience of what they feel as okay. It's like as if it's not okay all the time. It's very bizarre. And it gives us all the message that something is wrong with all of us every time this happens. If we cannot just sit for a moment and then allow another human being to just say what they feel in their body, currently experiencing, which is 100% reality, and not be okay with that. They're not doing anything, they're not hitting anyone, they're not like to just to be able to, experience. And then, of course, if you're able to actually understand why they feel it and compassion, that's great, even better. But first, this first step, I think it's very, very damaging to our world that we have not often been taught to do that or have it done to us. And men as well, a lot. I was not, I don't think, sensitive enough to the experiences of men until recently in the past few years, where all of a sudden I moved away from thinking, and I'm not saying women didn't have it hard. This one doesn't, everyone has their different difficulties, but I really came to realize how barbaric the situation is for men, how they are raised to be, so dismissive of their own experiences, how they're thrown into wars to kill each other and they have to deal with that, and just so many things. Like it's really not easy.
No,
So
it's
I'm
very
really happy
toxic.
my yeah and I'm really happy. I mean, the circle has many men, probably half of the group is men, and so it's really nice to have that.
Oh, fantastic. You, I think this brings up a couple of points. The first thing is, you said this is very damaging because we just continuously repeat this process of not accepting, not acknowledging our truths. And it's like fish, if you're to go ask fish, hey, what do you think about the water? They're like, what is water? What do you mean? We're never really
It's
taught
there.
to see, right, what's there. So that brought up that point for me.
For
And then
sure, I
I
agree.
think, yeah, and this is a really great way to close that loop on that question, what is truth versus real? The distinction for me that helps me to understand it and experience it at this moment in time, Sandy, is that perhaps my feelings are valid. They're real. I can acknowledge them. Now, the truth component of it is more of, is it helpful based on the limiting assumptions that it's coming from? So if I feel hurt that my mom doesn't love me, or what she did makes me feel like it doesn't
Oh,
love me, right? It's not
yeah.
true. It's the
Does she
way that
love you
I'm
or not?
perceiving. Exactly. So I think there's that distinction that we can make is, what I'm experiencing is real. And to further ask that question, is this
Is
helpful
it true
for
that
me?
she actually doesn't love it or not? Did I
Exactly.
make that assumption? Or
Where does that
But
emotion
the
come
feeling
from?
that I didn't feel loved, for example, that is true. That is not to be, whenever you're speaking in an I language of what I feel, that is not, there's nothing to dispute there,
Yeah,
really,
it's
unless
real.
it's a thought like I'm a loser. That's not a feeling. That's not a physical, I feel sad, I feel. That is the theory. And where did that come from? So that, you can challenge for sure.
Yeah,
Like I
absolutely.
feel sad. I mean, that's not, that's real
It's
and
real.
true.
Exactly. So for me, the word truth aligns more so with my thought patterns versus real is acknowledging and validating that my feelings, my emotions, my state, my essence, my presence is actually here.
Yeah, I could see that way of separating them too, yeah.
So when I think about the way that I have been conditioned to not see the water, if you will, it reminds me of a section in the book where you talk about or you ask the specific question, who and when, did you feel seen unconditionally? Is there someone that comes to mind for you?
Yeah, I was writing in the book actually Because I do encourage people to go towards their pain and to experience it, right? Experience your pain because it's real, right? It's there. So you might as well feel it, see it, process it, and then it'll pass. And I do think one of the biggest pains that I've experienced and others as well is not feeling loved unconditionally. And I think it's very, very rare. I don't think I've really witnessed it in other people either with their families. It's just very rare to even expect someone to love somebody else unconditionally because they'd have to love themselves unconditionally first. There's no way you could do to someone else what you don't do for yourself. And of course, unconditional doesn't mean that we accept any behavior or that we even talk to the person. You can love somebody unconditionally from far, right? But to actually feel loved unconditionally, I don't think that is a usual thing in our world whatsoever, and it's painful for people. But it is reassuring that I know for a fact, because I know it's real, because I feel it, that we are able to love ourselves unconditionally, and that might be a process to get to or figure out, whatever. But that is actually possible to have that feeling towards yourself. And not again to expect or look for it from the outside, which is very unlikely, I think, to be experienced to the extent that you can have it for yourself, because you're the one, who knows yourself so well, knows everything. And so back to your question of did I ever experience, I actually had a grandmother who was very unique. And I put the section called Loving Eyes based on what I witnessed in her eyes, which is that she literally had love, but not even just for me. It was like everybody. You could see it in the eyes. And so I think everyone who knew her always felt like they were the favorite. Because, so it was not a unique, but it's something that was a very strong, powerful experience for me to see those kind of eyes in the world.
Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you for
She was
sharing.
beautiful.
I sense it just from the way you're speaking about her. How unique.
Lucky me that I saw that.
Got it. Do you mind if we veer off topic a little bit?
Not at all. Going to anywhere.
You said lucky me, which makes me think about gratitude. What is your relationship to gratitude?
Yeah, that's a hard one, actually. I don't even know if I arrived at a final one. And I'll tell you, and I'm actually curious what you think about this, because I'm still a little bit, I don't want to say confused about it, but I'm still, whatever, unclear about what to do with that. Because what I was concerned about when I was, listening again, I was listening to a million things during my difficulties, just trying to feel well. So a lot of gratitude would be grateful for certain things, right? And it's not that we don't want to be grateful for kind of, well, first of all, pairing things into positive, negative all the time. Like, I'm grateful for, am I grateful for the suffering that I had? I don't, that's a weird thing to say that I'm grateful for it, or I'm grateful I had this terrible relationship because it now taught me how to live. Like, it's not grateful exactly. So it's maybe not the right word. But to just assume that experiences are good and bad all the time. And when we have this focus on, okay, I'm only grateful for these things, but then everything else I don't want to have in my life. So it caused a bit of difficulty for me to try to separate life experiences into kind of good, bad, and whatever. But it's not that I don't feel grateful for many, many things, but there's that piece of me that I still struggle with in terms of the way gratitude might actually be hurting us in a way, because it doesn't allow the space for not necessarily being grateful, but accepting the wisdom or the lessons of certain things that might have not been easy, or seeing, the meaning in difficult paths, or I don't know. I've kind of put a mix of words, so maybe you could speak to what you think about it, and you can share with with
I
me and
mean,
everyone else, your view.
yeah. So, Sandy, what you had said about, maybe this world of gratitude giving, puts us in a space where we think we have to be Pollyanna, or we have to separate our experiences to positive and negative. And I don't want to go against my human nature to try and not separate things, because they just inherently happen. Things are either expansive for me or constricting for me. And the one thing I learned about suffering is that it's only possible if there is a resistance. If I can, because I love equations, pain plus resistance equals suffering. As long as we can remove the resistance, it's no longer suffering can no longer be present. It's struggling. And I think it ties back to one of the first things we talked about today, Sandy, about how I think we have trouble accepting uncomfortable positions and situations, and being able to hold space to be able to ride out the difficult situations, ride out situations that are uncomfortable, discomforting, I think is a wonderful aspect of and shows our character and the human will or the human spirit. So, I mean, I'm not going to be grateful for, let's say I got into a car accident, the way that I feel grateful for the love of my puppies, for example. There's definitely like a different wave like there. But acknowledging that the human experience does tend to be polarizing, and understanding the contrast and being okay, accepting,
Exactly.
receiving.
I
I think
just,
we're on
I
the same
think
page.
now that I think about it, I guess my hesitation with all that is that if there's always a focus like, okay, I'm only grateful for, A, B, C, D, or like good things that I'm grateful for. So now when something negative, so-called, occurs, right, then I'm very, very quick to have to, I have to get back to the, to the positive, because I'm maybe trained to only try to find all the stuff that to be great. You know what I mean? That's what I think was in it for me, that it could be a way of avoiding, again, avoiding the pains or avoiding the difficulties, to try to see, trying to make life everything perfect or whatever, something in there. I don't know. I don't think I verbalized it exactly, but something's still swimming around in there.
I think you've probably reconciled what gratitude is for you. It just doesn't fit with what we've been taught about what gratitude needs to be.
Maybe, yeah.
In the interest of time, Sandy, I would love to say thank you for being here with me today and sharing your wisdom and sharing your essence and light. And I want to leave you with the question of what one, or maybe a couple, tips, advice do you have for people who are struggling with accepting the pain or interweaving aspects of either judgment or shame that comes with our human experience?
Oh, so for people dealing with pain, well, I mean, one thing you could do is to not surround yourself with people that are shaming you or putting you down, and even in subtle ways. Putting people down is done so constantly with just tone of voice, raised eyebrow, many ways that people put each other down. And so to try to start putting boundaries on that. That little thing that I taught about the three listening, those that are not listening in the healthy way, to start setting boundaries there and stop sharing with those people, because it doesn't really help you. But unfortunately, it's rare to have the third one. So hopefully you could find someone, or even a therapist, or yourself. I don't know if you do private clients, or someone who can really listen in a way that allows that space to process your things without judgment and without putting you down for what you're experiencing, for sure. So that's obviously a big one. And for me, well, I mean, shame is such an interesting one to look at. To me, it's not really yours. Like, any thoughts that are negative about you, for me, they come from outside. So they've been like injected into your head. You could try to find the source if you want. You can say, where did I get this idea from? And maybe if you figure it out, you realize, oh, it was, this person, this caregiver, this whatever else. It could be interesting to inquire into your feelings of anger, healthy anger. Nothing wrong with the word anger or the experience of anger, obviously, even if we've been taught the opposite, it's just not true. And to experience a healthy level of anger towards the person who is doing that, I think that could be quite relieving of, for some people anyways, of those feelings, because you're, refusing to accept that sentence or whatever ideas were put in about you. And again, I think just like you, I mean, you're very focused on the body. I'm so happy to hear that. It's so rare, actually. And so anything body, anything somatic that you can do that gets you more into your body, see which one feels right for you and start feeling the body. And it'll help from those thoughts.
Do you
That's what
have a
comes to
favorite way to
mind.
do that?
I'm a big feeler, so I always move in anything. So I've tried, I like Gaga dance if you want to look it up, it's fun. I do yoga, I do slack line where you balance on between trees on those things. I because I just love, moving. I love moving. Yeah,
Oh,
so I
I
do
love
whatever,
that.
and it's not that I'm great at anything. I just, like to do things. So
You
yeah, it's
enjoy
not that
it.
I'm an expert. Yeah, I actually enjoy moving a lot. And yes, I'm one of those people who can have my music on when I'm having a walk and start doing some unique movements as I walk.
Yes,
Since I
fantastic.
don't care what anyone thinks, it's very liberating. Yeah.
Yes. Wonderful. Thank you for sharing. I did have one final question, if
Sure.
you have time for it. I'm sure a
Yeah.
lot of us are curious about it, like I am. The activist part, the activist side of Sandy, what is she passionate about today?
I'm passionate about peace on earth. I'm really, really wanting the gold. And I do believe, and it's not that I'm going to create it by myself, obviously, but I do deeply, deeply believe that the only way we have peace is by each person finding their own peace. Like that for me is my what I feel is true. I don't think it's a wrong belief. It feels right to me. And so I'm trying to do my part, and you're probably trying to do your part. And many, many other people are trying to do their part in terms of guiding each other towards how to find our own inner sense of well-being and peace. And to me, when that happens, it will exude outside yourself. It will translate into everything outside yourself. And so instead of focusing on trying to resolve outer conflicts, which I think doesn't really necessarily solve anything in the big picture or the long term, I wish we would all turn inward and resolve our inner conflicts. And from there, hopefully things will get better. So I'm trying to do my little piece on that to the extent it helps. I don't know. We'll see.
A woman after my own heart. That was beautifully
Yeah.
said. Beautifully said. Thank you for sharing, Sandy. Thank you so much for your time here today.
Thank
It was so
you.
delightful to have you. Where
Oh,
can
you
we
are
send
so
our
sweet.
listeners?
Well, I have a website called thecouragecircle.com, and I have a, I mean, you can look up there the book, or you can join the circles if you want, if you're in Montreal, or I have a small circle online also. You're welcome to join. It's all free. And I also started just 2 weeks ago a Telegram channel, which means I'm posting every day. That took me a lot of courage, actually, because I've never done these things. So now I'm posing, since all these wars are happening, I'm like, that's it. I have to do my whatever. So I
Love it,
started
love it.
posting little videos every day on these topics. The channel's also called The Courage Circle. It's new and whatever. I'm doing what I feel I have to
Fantastic.
do.
Excellent. Excellent. I will make sure I spell everything out correctly in the show notes. Thank you so
Thank
much
you.
again. This was so wonderful.
Oh, I really, really appreciate you having me. Thank you so much. Good luck with the dogs.
Thank you.